I'm Riley Reese. This is the Sophia Unfiltered podcast, where we bring together thought leaders, wellness entrepreneurs, makers, and emerging health leaders. We're here to have raw, unfiltered conversations because sharing your stories has the power to change lives, help others heal, and transform the way we take care of ourselves. Here we go.
And today we are joined by Dr. Miller, Robin, and Karen. Thank you all so much for being here. And for our listeners who may not know you and would love to hear a little bit about your personal story and how you got into meditation and founding iRest, would you guys mind sharing a little bit about yourselves?
Hi, thank you for having me here, Riley. I'm Richard Miller. I'm the founder of iRest. And I really began developing these teachings back in the 70s when I was both a psychotherapist, psychologist, but also a meditation teacher working with different populations. A lot of the people I was working with at that time had been in car accidents, plane accidents, different trauma-related events. So I began looking at what might be the most effective interventions I could do to work with the person to help them heal through these kinds of issues, along with anxiety, depression, sleep-related disorders, and also a whole host of people that just wanted a deep sense of well-being ushered into their lives, you might say. So over the 70s and 80s and 90s, I really honed it with all the people that I was working with, both individually in groups, and then I was also being invited to travel around the United States and different parts of the world to teach workshops. So I had the opportunity to work with a multiple number of people. Then in the 2000s, people started asking me if I could teach them the protocol that I had developed that they were getting during the classes. So I decided to open a nonprofit and named it back then the Integrative Restoration iRest Protocol. And along the way, I got a call from now my dear friend, Robin Carnes, who, and I can have her tell her story, who helped bring and usher in this program into the military through the research we originally did at Walter Reed Medical Center. So I'll put a little period there and let Robin maybe carry the ball a bit.
Yeah, my name's Robin Carnes. I got into yoga and meditation because I had a dysregulated nervous system from a very tumultuous adolescence and decade of my 20s. And I didn't know to call it trauma, but that is what it was. And I noticed that when I first did yoga that I had, which was not ubiquitous as it is now, and this was in the 70s when I first did it, that I experienced a sense of calm inside me that nothing else had given me. And I'd tried different drugs and alcohol and all kinds of things to try to calm myself down. And I just found that wow, I don't know what that was, but I need a lot of it. It was many years later that I became a yoga teacher, was through working at a yoga studio in Tacoma Park, Maryland, which was adjacent to less than a mile from where Walter Reed Military Medical Center was before it moved to Bethesda, where it is now. I got involved through another teacher at the yoga studio, asked me to get him to sub for her class. I did something called Yoga Nidra, which I was teaching a lot of, but people did not really know what that was. She didn't know what it was. Her students really liked it. It wasn't iRest yet. It was just some like basic like Satchitananda Yoga Nidra. And then she got the idea. This was in 2005. And her name was Rachel Green. And we're all here partly because of Rachel. She got the idea here at and it was in the beginning of the Iraq-Afghanistan wars. Maybe this would be good. Something, the Yoga Nidra would be good for people who had PTSD, which, you know, they were returning by the thousands and all the different treatments that were being utilized were still, let's just say there was lots of room for improvement of what could be helpful. And there was a sense of the gift of desperation in the military as well, I think. And so she really had the idea to do this study, which became this as Karen and I were saying, little study that changed the world, and asked me to participate in it. I knew I needed some, you know, backup. Like, I just sort of had been doing this out of reading a book. And I was told by some of my yoga colleagues to call Richard Miller. He's the guy. And Richard Miller answered the phone. And he and I had about an hour long talk, after which I got off and said, okay, my mind is thoroughly blown. And we started working together on this study. And then Rachel died right before the study started. And so I became the lead instructor and Karen came in as the assistant instructor. So that's kind of how the lineup all happened. The universe brought us together. And for the next 6 years, I was hired as a regular, you know, a contractor and a daily employee of this incredible, innovative PTSD treatment program that was at Walter Reed. IRES then became a daily part of their program after the study was over. So I was there for 6 years. And during that time, I received a lot of mentoring from Richard. And that has, you know, something I'm grateful for every day of my life. So, and it's totally influenced the way I teach and live my life. So I'm going to stop there and hand that to Karen.
Thank you. I'm Karen Saltis. And it is interesting how all this kind of serendipitous events happen, but I'm a clinical social worker by training and have done some form of mental health, starting with inpatient psychotherapy and treatment. I've done the whole gamut. And I've also been interested in meditation since my late teens, when I think I was trying to manage my own life and fell into doing TM at that point, and just kept exploring different forms of meditation, I think, throughout my life. And I remember being with a group of fellow meditation practitioners, and one of them had brought a tape of Yoga Nidra, the traditional kind of practices that came out of the kind of, I call it the blue book in Yoga Nidra. And something struck me in that moment that was different than all the Vipassana, mindfulness, TM I had done. I thought, I got to know what this stuff is. And I remember buying the cassette tapes that Richard Miller, I didn't know who he was, but he had this set of 6 cassette tapes that you could do. And I was trying to figure it out. And I was just listening to them over and over and over. And I remember thinking, you know, this is not as relaxing, even though that I certainly felt more relaxed, but it was a more challenging in-depth, I'd say, meditation, just kind of a relaxation practice. And then I got connected to Robin when she was doing the study. And how I ended up in the VA was I was also trained as a yoga teacher, and I had a regular Sunday morning class I taught at a yoga studio in Northwest Washington. And I had this nice lady that was coming for months. One day I was talking about Yoga Nidra, and maybe I was going to do a workshop about it. And she came up at the end of class and she said, would you come and teach this at the VA? And what I didn't know is she was a PhD nurse who was working under the head of epidemiology for the entire VA system at the time. And it was kind of the beginning nuggets of integrative medicine in the VA system. And that's was my entree, and spent the next 8 years teaching IREST at the VA in DC. The greatest teachers I had, in addition to Richard and the support of Robin, I would say, were learning from the veterans and their own experience and what they were reporting. Research is sometimes hard to get going because of the funding and the financing and the details, but anecdotally, what I was hearing was kind of amazing. So that even if I hadn't been a believer, I became a believer by what I was seeing, you know, changing in the lives of, mostly I was working with Vietnam veterans who'd been struggling for decades, and just seeing the amazing unfolding over time of improvements in anxiety, depression, chronic pain, and that sense of connection to each other and to themselves. So I'll stop there.
Yeah, that's incredible. So Karen, you got involved based on you both are in the area. Dr. Miller is in California. You're bringing in his protocol to work at a study at Walter Reed. Is that about right?
Yeah.
You know, there's a wonderful backstory, because when I remember the very conversation I had with Robin when she called me and she said, would you be willing to train me? And I said, of course. She said, would you come to Washington? And I said, no, why don't you come here to California? And she said, I can't. And I said, well, then let's do it over the telephone. So the initial training with Robin and I for many months was in numerous phone calls, back and forth, back and forth.
Including like ongoing supervision once I got in the room with, you know, eight people with PTSD every day. And we would talk at least once a week where I would, you know, have a list of things like, okay, so this happened. And it was just really, I count it as one of the greatest blessings of my life that I got to do the work and then I got that kind of support from you.
So Dr. Miller, for our listeners who may not know still today what iREST is, can you tell us what your protocol
is? And I'd like to backtrack for a moment to the first time I ever experienced the protocol in a very rudimentary form, much like probably Robin and Karen were first experiencing it. It was in 1970, I came into the room during a yoga class, and at the end, the instructor taught what I now know is a rudimentary yoga nidra practice. And I walked into that room, I would say, feeling depressed, anxious, really disconnected from myself, from many experiences I had had growing up. And I walked out that night. The depression was gone. The anxiety was gone. I felt deeply connected with myself. And as I walked out, I felt deeply connected with the entire universe. And I remember coming home thinking, number one, what just happened? What was this protocol that I just experienced? How do I find out more? And it really moved me into this trajectory. And so for many years, I did teach it as yoga nidra, studied with many remarkable teachers as I learned it myself. And then when we got involved with Walter Reed Army Medical Center, it was really humorous because as we were putting together the research study that Robin was going to be teaching, they said, you know, we're military. We don't do yoga. We don't do meditation. Can you call it something else? So I came up with the name Integrative Restoration. Integrative because it helps integrate all of our psychological aspects, helps us work through the wounds we may be carrying from past life experiences. And restoration because it restores us to what I have come to understand is this deep, innate intelligence that lives within all of us that allows us to feel a sense of harmony within ourselves and I feel a deep connection with the universe. And back in 2003 and 4, when I was starting to work with Robin, everything was iPhone and iPad. So I thought, well, what about iREST? I, in a little I, has that integrative aspect that puts our sense of self in its proper position and restoration or rest because it brings us into that deep sense of harmony within ourselves and the entirety of the universe. So it became originally Integrative Restoration iREST. And over the years now, the Integrative Restoration has kind of dropped away. People know it as iREST. And our initial foray with Walter Reed into their Deployment Health Clinical Center really has morphed then into studies we've done at the Miami VA, studies at Brooke Army Medical Center, and now we're in some, I'm told, 75 VA sites across the United States, Hawaii, Germany, 25 countries and some 6,000 teachers we've come to train over the years. So it's been a really exciting adventure and such an honor to work. As Karen was saying, it is the students, the veterans who have taught us the most in how to utilize this program, modify it over the years for the populations we work with, and bring it in all these incredible settings from healthcare to recreation centers. I'm now working with a program out of Nevada, one of the largest treatment centers for children with cancer. So to date, we've got about 40 research studies, and I know about 6 that are ongoing right now. And we keep adding to the research so that we can really show this program can help people from all walks of life, any ethnic or background they come back from sociologically, economically, culturally, and with all these different issues that people bring to the table, from trauma to depression, anxiety, sleep disorders, and interestingly, chronic and acute pain, as well as I was mentioning earlier, just to develop an inner sense of well-being that we carry with ourselves that I have come to realize is indestructible once we really can feel into it. And this is really the design of the program, to help us tap into something that has been here the whole time. It's never been hurt, never been harmed, doesn't need healing. It's an indestructible well-being that once we tap into it, as one veteran from Miami so beautifully said, every program he had ever come into through the military to heal his PTSD had always started with what's wrong with him. Our program, the IRS program, was the first program he encountered that started off with what's right about him. And he said, that's made all the difference in his healing process.
No, that's incredible. And so from what I take from this, all of this IRS protocol got started based on your experience with yoga nidra, and then it was crafted along with the study that Robin was doing. So IRS is a form of yoga nidra, but can you tell us what the differences are?
Yeah, we should say, for our perspective, defining terms, yoga means that we're tapping into that innate intelligence that lives within all of us, and that we can feel it, nidra, no matter the state of consciousness that we're in. So we could be feeling and tapping into that deep core center of well-being and feeling grief or sadness. We could be in moments of irritability or even anger, moments of depression that come from life experiences, and yet we're still feeling that well-being, which is helping us move through whatever state of consciousness we're in. So the original protocol, which came out of India and studies that I did, and Karen was talking about the blue book of Yoga Nidra that came out of the Shivananda teachings. I came out of the Satchitananda teachings. It was a beautiful protocol that was really, I would say, deeply relaxing. That's what it was primed for, just a state of deep relaxation. What I saw was within the protocol was embedded all the different, you might say, psychological or psychotherapeutic, even physical healing modalities that I had studied as I became a psychologist. I'm a registered hypnotist. I've studied medical books for years and taken medical courses. I'm trained as a Chinese medical practitioner back in the 70s as well. So my background I saw inherent in the rudimentary practice of yoga nidra, all the possibilities that could be there for healing. So if you look at the protocol, it's 10 aspects. The first is really what we call building an intention, because every journey starts with an intention, and helping people tap into a very deep sense of initiative, you might say, within themselves, that they're looking forward to in utilizing the program. And then, very importantly, and I've seen over the decades we've been doing IRS, many other protocols are now integrating this into their programs. But we started by looking at, how do we develop an inner resource of well-being, this touchstone that we can carry with us through the rest of the program and into our life? Because as we're working with the protocol, the normal defenses, you might say, that we've been using to keep the trauma down so we don't have to experience undigested trauma, unmetabolized material, those defenses are slowly becoming kind of holy, so that trauma can begin to rise to the surface. So the inner resource is a touchstone, a foundational resource we can use so that we don't get carried away by any trauma that might start to come up, so we can keep coming back and touch that deep sense of core well-being throughout the program as we're doing it. The second phase is we teach body sensing, which is helping person come in touch with the places within our body where all the information we need for healing lives, and it's helping us gain access to that. Then we have a program. Part of the program is breath sensing, where we're using breathing to deepen that experience of body sensing, but also to give us tools with which we can meet trauma and help keep a sense of steadiness in us. Both body sensing and breathing give us that deep foundation along with the inner resource. Then two components follow that, one that's dealing with emotions and feelings, and the other that's dealing with thoughts and beliefs. Because, for instance, in trauma, there's a lot of undigested, unmetabolized material that is of an emotional content, feeling content, but also a lot of beliefs that we may have fallen into prior to the trauma in our family upbringing or in our culture, but also through the experience of trauma. So we're helping a person learn how to come into friendly terms, actually, with their body, senses, emotions, and thoughts, so that they can utilize them as what we call healing messengers. Messengers there that are to help us, I like to use the term, gallop on our way through our healing. We have another component that is helping us tap into a deep well of joy that, like the initial well-being, is unbreakable. It's independent of our circumstance, and we can learn how to carry that through our life. And then we have a component that's helping us learn how to take a huge perspective on what's arising, because it's so easy for us when we're having a difficult emotion or a traumatic memory to identify with it and fall into it. Whereas this aspect, we call it awareness or perspective, gives us the ability to step back and see it as if it were up in front of us on a stage. One vet I was working with in Utah during a training said he feels like he's in a helicopter looking around at his trauma from different angles, getting new perspectives he wouldn't have otherwise been able to see. And then the last piece of the program is integration. How do we carry this into our daily life, into our relationships, into our workplace, into all the activities that we find ourselves in daily life, where we're learning to integrate each of these 10 steps, either independently or smoothly as an integration when we might find ourselves in a difficult circumstance or situation. But primarily, learning how to carry that deep core well of well-being that really is unbreakable, indestructible, that I've come to recognize lives within all of us. We just need to bring it to the surface of our awareness. And Rob and Karen, if you want to add anything to that description, please.
Well, I might just speak to the underlying question about what makes us different from just what you might call yoga nidra. Now that you said what it is, what it isn't, well, we took out purposefully and continue to refine the language to meet the population that we're working with, but we took out what I would call woo-woo language or spiritual language. Doesn't mean the process isn't spiritual. If that means something to them and they have a spiritual experience, it may not even mean anything to them. They still have a spiritual experience, but we're not telling them you should feel this certain spiritual way. And using language that's spiritual from a yogic perspective, which is a very big turnoff to many people, not just people in the military, but people in general, but definitely to people in the military. It's something that puts up barriers rather than brings them down. So the language is very important. We use secular, straightforward, down-to-earth language that people aren't going like, what is he talking about? So that's one thing that I think is a very important distinction. Another distinction is we never tell people to relax. They may have a very relaxing experience, or they may have a very not relaxing experience. But I know that, you know, my job as a teacher from the very first day was say, hey, this may sound kind of like something you've done that's like a relaxation exercise, and relaxation may occur, and great if it does, But that is not actually what we're about here. We're about helping you practice learning to be with yourself, no matter how yourself is, you know, to meet yourself as you are in any given moment with a lot of kindness and curiosity. And that, you know, that sounds really nice, but it actually is a very challenging thing. And it's, you know, I think Karen pointed to it when she said, you know, this wasn't just a relaxing thing. This was like, it's a skill. So that's a different thing. We're not telling you how to feel. And for being a trauma sensitive, it is a trauma sensitive approach. And you know, there are many things that that means. But one of the things it means is I'm not telling you how it's right to feel. And, you know, anger could be a part of it. Sadness could be a part of it. It's not an escape. In fact, it's a deep dive. So rather than always running from whatever it is that and trying to use a technique to get away from it, is actually allows us to turn towards it very gradually and very incrementally and very gently, and so that it can't run at us anymore. The imagery, and Yoga Nidra is often filled with imagery. The Blue Book was, you know, that came here and kind of brought Yoga Nidra to the United States, had a lot of imagery, some of which was quite disturbing imagery. Well, in iRest, we invite people to self-source the imagery or self-source the inner resource. We don't tell them, oh, go to a beach and lie down on the beach. Well, you know, they might have almost drowned. A beach could be the worst place in the world for them. The teacher that they most need is inside of them. The resource they most need is inside of them. And so we have... Part of what we're doing as teachers is inviting them to access that and trusting that they know best what's there for them and what kind of images and what kind of resources are going to be the most healing for them. So those are some things that I think make it really different and very trauma sensitive.
Yeah.
And actually just respectful of people, you know, not like this is how it should feel. And if it doesn't feel that way, you're not getting it.
Well, and in addition to everything Robin and Richard have said, I would really underscore this somatic focus. And I think we're understanding more and more about when we're working with trauma, the whole scope of mental health issues, that how important the body is and what's registered. And for so many people who've been through trauma, whether it's military trauma or cancer treatment, any of the myriad of kind of traumatic experiences, oftentimes we can feel like the body either completely we're outside the body, where the body's our enemy, it's betrayed us in some way if we've had a disease or an illness. And I remember one of the things, one of the veterans that I worked with really early on, about the third time he came in, and this was a guy who'd served three tours in Vietnam, and as he would say, we were taught to just kind of suck it up when we got home. And he had really crippling arthritis, I think, from just that amount of tension. And about the third session, he said to me, he said, I get what you're trying to get me to do. And that was merely just by the kind of body sensing and traveling through and giving sufficient time to really feel into the body. Because some of the other Yoga Nidra practices I've done kind of quickly go through the body. And that can be relaxing, but that deep dive into really feeling and sensing and exploring what's there is really, I think, a different aspect of iRest. And I remember he said to me, he said, I get what you're trying to get me to do. You're trying to get me to feel my body. He said, I've been trying for 40 years not to feel it. And the more that he came in over, and it's not a quick fix for a lot of people, but weeks and months and sometimes even years of really being able to come back inside his body, his arthritis improved, you know, just everything began to change. And there's one other anecdote. I think there's so much just coming back and feeling the body and sensing that enormous amount of information that's here is that I had a guy I worked with, and not long, unlike many veterans, you know, there's that kind of, I call it the 0 to 60 response where something happens and they get triggered, so to speak, and they're just, their whole nervous system goes into fight mode. And And I had a veteran, like many were, that would have these kind of explosive things and could never figure out how he got there, because he was a seemingly kind of calm guy. And he came in one day and he said, you know, all that body sensing that we're doing, just feeling the body and feeling the body and feeling the body. He said, I'm now noticing when I get irritated. And when I notice my irritation, I have all kinds of choices, so that it wasn't just shutting down until it just built till he exploded and couldn't figure it out. But he started to sense those kind of eruptions, so to speak, that were happening in the nervous system that were asking him to perhaps address something with someone in his environment or do something differently. So he had this choice to take action before his nervous system was off and running. And I think each of us could probably talk about lots of those kinds of examples. But I think what was I found different, and I think is different with iRest from some of the other yoga nidras, is that really slowing down and feeling in to the subtlety of experience, and without trying to relax, that creates its own sense of relaxation, kind of paradoxically, but just simply feeling.
I'd like to emphasize what you just said, Karen, because I think that's a really important point. We are trying to help people slow down enough on a continuum, so rather than be way out here in a reactivity, they can feel it at its very inception. And then we're offering them all these skillful means that, as you're so beautifully saying, Karen, gives people the sense of choice. They don't have to go into those old reactions, and that they have a lot of choice points along the way. And so the protocol is really giving people the skills, I like to call them a owner's manual we didn't get as children, that give us access to all these skillful means for meeting each encounter of life that we've either been in or we're going to have in the future. And I loved what you said, Robin, which is, we're not trying to tell people what to do. We're helping them find within themselves the means that exist within them. So they're their own authorities, not us. We're just simply helping them learn these tools in a manner. And as we were all trying to say, this is not a one-off. It takes weeks, months, sometimes for many people, years. Some people are using these recordings that we provide for all their lifetime. They keep coming back to them because it takes time to develop skillful means. But we are trying to help people realize they have a lot of choice points within themselves that they can access as they go through this protocol.
Robin, Karen, I would love to hear a little bit more about your work directly. You know, you said you started this study back in 2005, Robin, is that right?
We started designing the study and getting in touch with Richard in 2005, and the study itself happened in 2006.
I would love to hear, you know, what did that look like in the beginning? You know, the first time you used the protocol, your experience directly with the veterans that you were working with. A lot of our listeners could be veterans, they could be military, they could be, you know, they want to hear a little bit more of those real stories and how this came about.
There was a study, which was a 6-week study, and largely they were just trying to figure out, could they get anybody to sign up for something called meditation? And, you know, right, and that was, you know, 17 years ago. And now that's a very different scene in military cultures in many ways. But then it was a lot more weird. And so, you know, they did get some people to sign up. And so that was kind of the main thing they were trying to prove, is that they could do that in the study. And then, and you know, was it feasible? But then the Deployment Health Clinical Center, which was a Defense Department program, not just an Army program, and that people from all different branches of the service, active duty, came to this, and that they came to that program after it was kind of a last resort, honestly, because they had been medicated up, you know, very medicated, and there's nothing against medicine, but, you know, they were still having really severe symptomology. They had tried many, many, many other things, and they they showed up at this. And this program had multi-dimensional. And IRIS was one part of it when they hired me. So after the study, they hired me. So I came in every day at the end of the day. And so things I noticed were that, you know, people would come in and tell me, you know, I know, you know, kind of like, you're a nice lady and I know you mean the best for me. But first of all, they were a little bit afraid I was going to hurt them because of the word yoga, that it was going to hurt because their bodies hurt a lot already because so much trauma and also jumping out of planes and carrying stuff that was incredibly heavy. And even in their 20s, a lot of them just were super busted up. So the idea of moving around very much didn't sound so good, but we did that very gently. So I did some yoga and Qigong with them as well. But the overall, again and again and again, through cycle after cycle after cycle of people that came through the program, they liked the IRIS the best. And it was things like, coming up to me the first day and say, you know, this isn't going to work for me because I haven't slept more than 2 hours in like 5 years. And so like, this is not going to work. And I just don't want you to take it personally. And I was like, okay, got it. And that must be horrible. And what have you got to lose, really? How about we try it? And so they would. And then, I'd say 95% of them had improved sleep to start off with. And sometimes they would, you know, tell me, this one guy said, I remember him telling me he had left Iraq 2 years before. But he'd never gone off guard duty, like in the sense that his nervous system was still on guard duty. And, his fight flight response never stopped. And after, I think it was the third or fourth practice, he sat up and said, you know, I went off guard duty, you know, like that. And that happened. And he actually had gone to sleep in the practice, which was, you know, definitely okay. I learned to like be in the soup of a symphony of snoring and know that all was well. And one of the things I noticed was that the snoring would be very raucous at the first week or so, and then it would become much quieter and still, and this fineness in the room, like some of the deepest meditation I've ever shared with people after maybe they had been in a practice maybe like 8 or 9 times, and the room was just so still. There was incredible awareness and stillness there. Let's see. They would tell me things like they could use, you know, remember it and go in an MRI machine and get, you know, an MRI, and they had been avoiding that for a long time. Or they wouldn't get in a fight, that idea of a choice. They could feel themselves getting really mad at their wife, and then instead of going into the normal fight, they would say, I'm going to go upstairs and meditate. And the wife would be like, what? but they exercise a choice that they wouldn't have had in the past. So those are some of the anecdotal things I remember people saying. But overall, like much better sleep and the ability to go into go into a mall, for instance. Their wife wanted them to go to a mall and they couldn't do it before because it was just too anxiety provoking. It was too exposed, but they would be able to go and like listen to the recording while their wife shopped. And it wasn't only men, by the way, there were also women that came through the program. And we worked with some sexual trauma as well. So those are some things that occurred.
You know, I might add in that initial study, I think there were 19 people who entered into the study, and they were all at the top of the scale of PTSD. At the end of the study, all were underneath the baseline for PTSD, except for one who was hovering right at the baseline. And that's what really showed them that this was a possibility that could really help people not just relieve the symptoms of their PTSD, like getting a good night's sleep for the first time. So many people I've worked with said, I've got the first good night's sleep since Vietnam, since the Korean War. I had one vet, even from World War II, is that I got my first good night's sleep since World War II or since Iraq or whatever experience I've had. I also remember there was an emergency call I got from the principal investigator at the very start of the study when Robin was working with these vets. That one vet had had a really horrendous kind of revival of his trauma. And he called me because he said, I think we need to shut down this study. And I said, well, isn't this exactly what we want? We want people to see that they can go through a reaction like this and come out the other end. And so he quieted down. We continued the study. And I think that's one of the big things I saw and I continue to see in when I work with people is they may have a moment of trauma arising during the practice, but they're getting the skillful means with which to meet it and come out the other side. So as Robin's saying, after 6, 7, 8, 9 sessions, there's this deep stillness that begins to come into their being and they're realizing, I can meet this moment. I don't have to be afraid of it. And that's such a remarkable moment when we realize we do not any longer need to be scared of these experiences we've gone through.
Yeah, I was going to add everything each of you saying. We could probably talk for about 4 days about all the things that we've noticed. And I think the piece about improved sleep is really important. And I think that what I saw in the beginning, whether we were working with chronic pain or TBI across the board, that sense of people either getting a deeper sense of rest in the practice than they have felt. And I have people that would just sit up and say, you know, that's the best I've felt in 3 years at the end of a practice, or they started sleeping more. And if you get people sleeping better, not only does that help every other aspect of their life, people will do almost anything you ask of them, you know? And I think that in the early days when we were using, guys, old technology now, CDs to give people to take home, and they could use those as much as they needed. And I had guys who were sometimes using those CDs multiple times a day to go to sleep, to get through the day. It gave them ability to do that practice on their own, independent of the healthcare system. And I remember one guy asked me, he said, what happens if you do this like twice a day? And I said, well, you tell me, because he'd been doing them multiple times. And he said, you know, I've started doing the CD practice twice a day. He said, all of a sudden, the laundry's getting folded, the books are getting back to the library. All of a sudden, this kind of distracted feeling of not having control over his life, that things were, he was settled down enough to start feeling like his life was manageable. So I think both being able to give people access to recordings or whatever the technology is that can support them is really useful, because then they have control over their own practices and when and where and how they use it to regulate. And you were asking also about what was it like in the beginning. And in the beginning at the VA, I mean, this was all, I think we're kind of on, felt like for me, virgin territory. And I was learning and I was using just the scripts from the study that had been done at Walter Reed. So it was really pretty much word for word exactly what we'd done before. And I was doing the same practices over and over initially. And I remember asking Richard, I asked you one time, aren't they getting bored of hearing me say the same thing every time? And you said to me, you know, that need to be creative in what we're doing. That was more my need than that of my students. And I did have students who could almost tell me if I changed a word in a week. But what I began to recognize that by keeping it more or less the same what we were doing week to week, and I might emphasize one part of the practice a little more and really let people know what I was going to do, if I was going to change any part of what I was doing, so they knew what was coming. There were no surprises. But by keeping pretty much what I was saying the same week to week, it allowed people to feel that sense of safety, They knew where I was going, and they could keep moving deeper into their own practice, that they felt safe enough to do that. So I think one of the things that's really great about this protocol we have, we know it works. We've got these manualized scripts that we can use as teachers over time. We may begin to free ourselves a little bit from that, but we know it works, and we've seen it work time and time and time again. And we use similar scripts. We did a study at the VA on with veterans that had traumatic brain injury and chronic pain, and we were looking at biological measures. We didn't, unfortunately, have sleep measures there, but the reports right from the beginning was sleep was going better, but we had increased immune function. We had decreased cortisol levels, trying to remember what else was in there, but we were really looking at the hard physical data of what was changing in the nervous system over time using iRest. And overall, it had a positive experience effect on the whole biochemistry of the body. So not just psychological report, but we see that it really can change different aspects.
And Karen, do you want to speak to what we were talking about before the podcast started about the potentiating effect?
I may have said this even in the beginning of this today, is that I think that iRest, it's certainly wonderful as a standalone practice that people can utilize. But oftentimes when we're in treatment facilities, people are getting different kinds of interventions. And I think that that downregulation of the nervous system that we get from iRest really helps potentiate the effect of other interventions, whether we're doing exposure therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy or acceptance and commitment therapy. Yeah, we often felt like we tried to organize our classes so that when people were coming into the VA, they were able to get a multitude of interventions, you know, in one drive-in, so to speak. And it felt like that, and it didn't really seem to matter whether you had acupuncture before your iRest or vice versa. It seemed like it was potentiating the effects of both, so that it wasn't just one and one is two, but one and one equals three or more. So that I think it's a great adjunct to any other kinds of interventions that people may be receiving. And oftentimes people are getting a multitude of services.
I'd love to piggyback off what you're saying, Karen, because that's exactly what I've seen over the years in our study that we did at the Miami VA. Actually, many of the people who are on antidepressants, different medications, found that they were needing less medications. And so it was important in those studies where we made sure they were seeing their medical specialists to tone down their medications. And that had to do with antidepressive medications, anti-anxiety medications, but also what I was fascinated in their diabetic medications and across other realms of the physical body. So I'm always aware that when a person starts a practice of iRest, that they be in touch, say, with their medical doctor, whomever they're working with, so that they can monitor these, because the amount of meds they may be needing when they enter are going to potentially change as they go through. And some people have even gone off all of their meds as a result of long-term practice of iRest, which is just amazing and wonderful.
And Dr. Mueller, can you speak a little bit more, or maybe Karen, you started mentioning this, in some of the studies, they're clinically validated, right? So you're seeing, I guess you're doing blood work before and after. Can you talk a little bit more about the science behind, you said, all of the different markers that were coming down, not just sleep and the mental benefits of this, but the actual physical markers that you're looking at?
Yeah, I think that study is actually up on the iRest website now. It was done in conjunction with another iRest teacher who was working on his PhD neuroscience. I can't remember the specifics, but basically had to do with kind of neuro and neurochemistry at American University. And we did pretests of measures of cortisol levels. I think it's IL-6 that's related to immune function. There's one other one in there that I frankly can't pull up the memory of, but it's all in that study of really looking at the biological markers. So it's not just self-report. There was a decrease in cortisol levels, which we know are markers that indicate levels of stress. When we're more stressed, we have higher levels of cortisol. Our immune function tends to go down and we have better immune function. I think the challenge with that study was that we didn't have enough subjects to call it significant, but we had those markers there that show that there's something else. You know, it's not just I feel better, but there are actual biological markers that you can track.
In most of our early studies, qualitative, we were using psychological batteries of tests, you know, that are all verified and valid. And then slowly we've garnered research studies that have been bringing in these more quantitative measures like cortisol and blood. And one of the studies I'm entering into right now with healthcare staff, actually doctors, nurses, and then children going through cancer and their families, we're going to be looking at these kind of biomarkers. Most of the studies, or many of the studies we've done, are called pilots because we're not having large numbers of people. But the beautiful thing that the NIH has come back to us and said that all of your markers and all of your studies are in the direction where we want them to go. Either they're increasing positive markers like well-being and sleep increase, or they're going down negative markers like people are feeling less depressed, less anxious, and things like that. So we're continuing to garner studies. As I said, I know of at least five right now that are going on in the United States, United Kingdom, Australia, different countries. One of the things we've wanted to validate is across different issues, sleep, depression, chronic pain, all these days, whatever, that iREST is significantly or does meet the markers we're looking for. And that's what we've seen across all the issues. But the second one was across all the different populations, whether it's military or whether it's people in a healthcare center or just normal people off the street. We wanted to validate that any kind of population it serves, age it serves, and culture. And this is what we've continually validated: cross-cultural, cross-population, cross-age, and cross-issue. We get the markers we're looking for, and that's really a tremendous advantage I see of the iREST protocol. And as Karen was saying, it's going to potentiate any other practice or modality or intervention a person is going through, whether it's cancer treatment. We've done study with people going through cancer treatment. We've done studies with people with multiple sclerosis. And again, what we find is they go through their treatments with much greater ease and well-being. We've had people report that they've used less anesthesia when they're getting an operation. They heal faster. And there are wonderful studies that have been shown that meditation like iREST not only helps a person go through an operation, say, and use less anesthesia, but the doctors actually report having a better experience operating, and they're in blind studies where they don't know who's getting what. That's quite an amazing thing, that to think that a person going through iREST is also affecting the people around them. And might I add to that, which is one of the things I've seen, and I'm sure Karen and Robin can say the same thing, is when a person goes through iREST in their healing, they're not just healing themselves, they're affecting their families, the people around them, their friends. It's a resonance that happens in their whole environment. And oftentimes when I'm working with someone in my office, I will invite their partner in to sit in the corner of the room so that not just the person I'm working with is getting the benefit, but their partner is too. And so we see the effect in enhanced relationships. We did a study at Brooke Army Medical Center with military who were married, because when one or both are deployed, the divorce rate tends to skyrocket up to 70% or more. And we were able to show that iREST could enhance a person's marital satisfaction and help them navigate these difficulties that they often encounter. So it's wonderful to see the validation across all these different issues, populations, culture, and places around the world where the practice is coming into.
I mean, that's incredible. And with all of the clinical evidence of improved well-being and outcomes on our physical and mental health, I mean, we must have to sit in meditation for, you know, what, 8 hours a day, which we know that's not the case. So what does this look like for somebody coming in?
You know, you're speaking to somebody because when someone learns the practice, they're embedding it into the culture of their life. They're actually drawing from it all day long. So you could say they are in meditation for the rest of their lives as they learn this practice. And I do want to say, if people come to the IRES website online, we do have a free course that people can go through to experience the practice and see if it's something that's right for them. And the military has put together a thing called Mindfulness Coach, which offers 42 of the meditations that are in my book, iRest for Healing PTSD, so they can access those 42 meditations at their leisure and in the comfort of their own home. And Karen was speaking to that, and Robin the same thing, which is when we teach people iRest, we're giving them take-home practices so they can learn it in the comfort of their own home, in their own pacing, and they can bring in their wives, their spouses. As one person I encountered at a conference, she was giving me my name badge, and she saw that I was Richard Miller with iRest, and she started crying. And I said, what's happening? And she said, I want you to know my son came back from the war front. I had lost my son to PTSD. He wasn't the same child that went off to war. And one day I asked him if he would be willing to listen to this practice with me, which I was doing myself. And he joined me for the practice. He lay down on the floor. And when he came out of the practice, I feel like I had gotten my son back. And we just see these kinds of experiences over and over and over. So we want people to know that they can access this course with people like Robin or Karen or myself and all of the 6,000 plus teachers we've trained around the world, but they can also learn it in the comfort of their own home at their own pacing, and invite in their spouse, invite in their children, invite in their friends, and that can be an enhancing experience for everyone.
Yeah, I agree. And a question that we like to ask all the guests on the show, if you could share three fundamental pillars that contribute to your well-being. We know one of them is obviously meditation, but...
I do a daily practice of yoga nidra every morning. Most mornings I do take times off because of other things taking me away, but I have a daily practice of IRES yoga nidra, a daily practice of breathing, pranayama practice. I get into nature as much as I can with my partner. And the third pillar for me is a wholesome diet. For me, it's mostly plant-based, but to really eat healthy so everything is supporting one another. So those are my three pillars.
Wow. I have almost as pretty much as the meditation's the foundation. I live in the beauty of Colorado. Now I'm looking out my window where we just got a foot of gorgeous fresh snow, and looking forward to getting my snowshoes on and diving into it. And being out in nature, I think, is profound for my nervous system, and just taking care of the, you know, mechanics of eating well and sleeping right, and pretty basic.
Yeah. I would just add two that are also very important to me, in addition to the ones you guys said, which are my dog lights me up every single day, a little oxytocin pump, and singing. I love to sing.
Yeah, those are great. And for our listeners to be connected with you, can you tell us a little bit how they can find out more information or sign up for IRES? I know we've already heard, and we'll link to the site afterwards, but do you want to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you if they have questions?
People can get in touch to me directly if they go to info@IRES.org or look up Richard Miller iREST and LC portals to come to me personally or to access our teachers and teachings around the world.
I am mainly teaching Qigong at this point online, gift of the pandemic, half-hour classes, and you can find me at qigongwithrobin.com or robin at qigongwithrobin.com.
And I'm kind of, I keep saying I'm trying to retire. I haven't quite successfully done it, but I really, you know, I'm available, particularly to people who are teaching in the military, because that's really where my heart lies. So, but the easiest way to reach me is just KarenSaltis@gmail.com, or you can access me through the teacher's resource page on the iREST website. And I also want to say to you, Riley, thank you for the work that you're doing in supporting these practices, because I think it may be safe to say that the three of us feel pretty, I don't even have a word for it, committed to the importance of these practices as with the healing potential and supporting well-being in people. And it just, it's wonderful to see how it's just exploded within the world and in military communities. As you said, it's kind of like Etsy. I like that word, the Etsy of...
Yeah, we're trying to create a space for everybody, whether they're looking for mental health support or physical or spiritual support. And, you know, you can't have one without the other. And I love how you brought that up, how, you know, meditation just makes everything else so much better. And, you know, I'm military and I don't think it's generally at the forefront to say, oh, I need yoga or I need meditation. But, you know, I'm dealing with all of these anxiety and depression or whatever other issues. And A, it's hard to reach out, but you kind of need a place to go to find the actual support you need by trusted practitioners who know what they're doing. So we're really trying to put the practitioners, to put the pieces together. And then, you know, obviously our work within the VA has just exploded lately. So really happy to be serving, you know, veterans and the population. And obviously that's very important to me. But to be able to bring the story from the three of you, and I know, you know, Robin, especially again with the Warriors at Ease project, you turned around and did, you just, I mean, just been really instrumental in really transforming well-being within the military veteran community. And so the work that you guys have done is just instrumental to what we're all doing now with our well-being. And it's just now, how do we get it to more people? And how do we, more tests, more studies, you know, what else can we do to get it to more people, the work that you guys have done 20 years ago. I think it's just incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I want to thank you, Riley, for bringing us together. It's like a little homecoming for me to see Robin and Karen and for us all to be together, because we've spent so many years touching base with one another in these precious teachings and taking it out in our variety of ways. And just beautiful to see how from that initial study that Robin was in with those first 19 subjects, how now all over the world people have this wonderful opportunity to engage in this healing process.
Well, thank you all for your work, and I appreciate it. And we'll be linking to iREST and to Warriors at Ease, and we'll be able to link and get you all in touch with Karen as well if you need to. So thanks everybody for listening today, and we hope that you check out iREST meditation.
Thanks so much for listening. This has been Sophia Unfiltered, a podcast by Sophia Health, the number one marketplace for health and wellness. Find services, classes, and products from the top health and wellness providers. Book an appointment or join live classes now. I'm your host, Riley Reese. If this episode resonated with you, we'd love to hear about it in the comments section of your favorite podcast provider or with a 5-star rating. Let us know what your biggest takeaway from this episode was, or share it with someone you hope to inspire. Join us again next time for more real conversations, stories, and insights that help empower you with the knowledge and inspiration needed to transform how we care for ourselves.